Welcome to Swiss Seduc. My name is Hans Fischer and my guest is David Sedaris.
Perfect pronunciation of my name.
I'm glad I did that correctly. Yes. Anyway, welcome.
Thank you.
Your books are called collections of, and I'm not sure, should I say, short stories or essays?
I say essays. I guess if I had to qualify them, I would call them comic essays.
But you say that the events in your essays are realish. Is that a word you coined? And what do you mean with it?
Well, I used it in my last book. Mm-hmm. I used the word because there was a story in the book about going to Princeton during the Stone Age. And I didn't go to Princeton, much less during the Stone Age. It was a graduation, a commencement address that I gave at Princeton. And I included it in the book. So I wrote at the beginning of the book, realish, because I didn't actually go to Princeton in the Stone Age.
Does that mean the other stories are real?
Yeah.
Except the names you said, you changed names.
Sometimes. Yeah, whenever I write for a magazine in America called The New Yorker, and whenever you change a name in The New Yorker, you have to acknowledge that you changed the name. Let's see. Yeah, when there's stuff that you're not sure about with The New Yorker, then you have to acknowledge at the same time that you're not sure of it. So. Mm-hmm.
Now, many of your essays are, for instance, about New York, about your life in France. What is the advantage for you of writing essays and not novels?
Well, I have a 10-page attention span. So after 10 pages, I really don't give a damn about something anymore.
Like the readers, I guess.
Well, I've started novels before, and one is 17 pages long, and another one is 23 pages long, but then I just don't care anymore. Mm. So I have to break things off into manageable pieces, I suppose.
Now, in two essays in your book, When You're Engulfed in Flames and Solution to Saturday's Puzzle, and in the book Me, Top Pretty One Day in 21 Down, you mentioned the New York Times puzzle. And you're proud that you can solve them. Could you explain to us what the New York puzzle is and what it means to you?
Well, it's a crossword puzzle, and I don't know if you have them in Switzerland, or I don't know if you have them the same, if they're done the same way. Like in England, I can't understand the crossword puzzles in England. I can't understand the clues. Like there are two sets of clues, and I don't understand which set you're supposed to go with. The New York Times puzzle is something I remember thinking for years. I thought, oh, I could never do one of those. And then I started with the Monday puzzles, which are the easiest. And it would take me like days to finish a Monday puzzle. And then I moved on to the Tuesdays. And then eventually I moved on through the Saturdays, which are really complicated. And then Sunday is just very long. Mm. And I don't have the patience for Sunday. I lose patience for those. But it became a big hobby of mine. And I'm sort of over it now. I'm sort of out of it. I just finished a tour in America. And so I went to 32 cities. And I don't think I finished a single puzzle. I read when I was on the plane instead of working puzzles.
In City of Angels, Bonnie is for the first time in New York and eventually meets some nice New Yorkers. But you tell her then that these weren't real New Yorkers. They were, I think, from Omaha or mm-hmm. Chattanooga. What are the real New Yorkers then?
That's always been interesting to me, how tourists often cannot recognize each other. And I noticed that after I moved to Paris, because I tended to think that anyone who spoke French was a Parisian, because I don't have an ear. I couldn't hear the accents. And I didn't realize that, oh, there's somebody from Marseille who's here on vacation, or there's someone from Toulouse, or there's someone from the western part of France, or from Normandy and Brittany, and I couldn't tell. But it's interesting to me that a person in his or her own country would not be able to tell. I mean, it was interesting to me that woman thought that those people were, like, for one thing, like, they were all wearing brand new puffy white sneakers. Because Americans never walk anywhere. Whenever they go on vacation, they go to the shoe store and say, I need a comfortable walking shoe. And so they're given these sparkling white sneakers that they might as well wear a sweatshirt that said, I am from out of town. because it's such an obvious giveaway.
Now, does that mean that actually New Yorkers are not nice? Because
no, and when I go back to New York, I'm sort of surprised at how polite people are. But I think I'm going back there from Paris. See, and that might be part of it. But I find New Yorkers, I mean, I see them quite often offering directions to people, and they had a reputation. It's interesting, like, America hated New York until September 11th, and they sort of embraced New York. And at the same time they embraced New York became more like everywhere else, you know, with the chain stores and with the Disneyfication of Times Square.
In another essay, in The Learning Curve, you make fun of your teaching, and I guess teaching in general. Is the academic world that bad?
Oh, no, that was more of a story about I taught for a while, and I didn't really have any business teaching. It was very nice of them to give me the job, but... And in that essay, I think I make myself look worse than I actually was. You know, I mean, I made myself look more inept than I actually was. I was an enthusiastic teacher. I wasn't a talented teacher. But I cared. I did care about my... I mean, I've had teachers before. I had a teacher at the school that I attended. I had an art teacher who came in on the first day and said, look, he said, I don't ever want you to talk to me about your artwork because I don't care about it. And no one at this school is going to care about it. So just keep it to yourself. And if you leave me alone, I'll pass you. And I wound up being friends with this person. You know, he and I just heard from him yesterday, as a matter of fact. And I took his class, golly, 22 years ago. But I never wanted to be that kind of a teacher. You know, I think sometimes if you're paying good money, if someone's paying good money, the least you can do is act like you care. But I actually did care, but that didn't make me a good teacher.
You furthermore make fun of art, I thought. With the art you created, you said you were ahead of your time, and then you were also scared that someone understood you. What is your attitude toward art then?
I was just a phony. I wrote about doing performance art, and, you know, there are people like Pina Bausch, right? And I think that she's probably a very sincere person and a very intelligent person. But then there are people like me, okay, who think, I can do that. And they just come up with something that's just completely meaningless and empty. And then you just sort of do this meaningless and empty thing, and you decide that it's the audience's job to find meaning in it. But actually, you should have sort of discovered the meaning on your own before you put it out there. So I think I was making fun of myself for just being such a phony. And by the time I went back to art school, I had that out of my system. And then I was just a regular bad artist, you know. But I wasn't a phony bad, you know. I wasn't bad because I was being a phony. I was bad because I was being myself.
Mr. Soutares, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.